Everybody good?
I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. Welcome back to another Barnes Bullets podcast. I'm your host, Dale Evans. And today I've got three people with me. I've got Andy Sparks to my right, Mitchell Cookson to my left, and Greg Sloan further to my left. And today we are talking all about the new suppressor series coming from Barnes for 2026. Andy, do you want to start with why would we ever want to come out with a suppressor series line of ammo?
Yeah, that's my question. So I'm going to turn it over to Greg and Mitchell and be like, explain this to me, right? Like, we obviously all know what's going on with the tax stamps, right? Those are now gone. So theoretically, right, it is not necessarily easier for people to get a silencer, right, a suppressor, but it's cheaper, right? They don't have the $200 fee there. And that probably means there's going to be manufacturers coming out of the woodwork and lower pricing and all that stuff, right?
I mean, so, we've already kind of seen that in the past 2 years, right? I mean, with all of these 3D printed suppressors, everything like that, it's a lot easier for people to get into I mean, even before we were even thinking about doing this, I had multiple people reaching out, be like, hey, we're coming out with suppressors now. And it's like, you're an apparel company. Does that make sense? You know,
but yeah, and I think there's obviously a lot of speculation in the industry. And I'm included in that as to what it'll do, but I predict, and maybe I'm way off here, but I think it will, right? You look at supply and demand, you look at lowering manufacturing,
right?
Like there's a lot of margins there. I think it will become more normal. It'll become more approachable. I believe they're going to come down in price over the next couple of years. And hopefully we see it to a point where, you know, everyone has one in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, because you're not civilized, right?
Obviously. Yes.
I mean, 200.
Yeah, go ahead.
$200 is quite a bit. I got a kind of a funny story. My first suppressor I bought through the company here. When we were with Remington, we had some deal and I bought a suppressor and I sat on it. I had the trust. I had everything ready. I sat on that for, I think, 2 or 3 years because I didn't want to pay the $200 tax stamp.
Yeah. Well, and it's just a piece of it, though, right? It's some of these cans are $1,000+.
Right. Yeah.
Plus, if you're setting it up in a trust, there's an expense there to do that correctly. Yep. And then the $200 on top of that, you know, and so it's as an accessory for your firearm, you know, for most normal people like us that are just working people, like it's hard enough to justify the firearm, the ammunition, all the
scope,
the optic, the gear that goes with it. And here's another potentially upwards of $1,500+ or more just to get one suppressor.
Yeah.
So you can see why so many people, I know a lot of shooters, obviously. I talk to a lot of shooters, a lot of hunters. And what I do, both hobby and at work, and for a lot of years, I mean decades, I know a lot of people that it's more like, I'd love to get one someday, you know, but it's just kind of like, do I justify it?
Yeah, I mean, personally, my best friend's that way right now, right? He's like, I don't know why I would go this route when I have to, like you said, spend $1,500 to $2,000 to buy a suppressor when it's like, I've gotten used to shooting. Everybody does it. But the thing is, what I always tell him is, you don't know what you're missing until you start shooting it consistently. And then one, obviously the impact, right? Or the sound thing, but just the recoil mitigation to me is so huge for it. Sorry.
To go more on that, the progression of suppressor use and how it's getting higher and higher. When I bought mine, so I obviously paid the $200 tax stamp 3 years after the fact. But at the time too, I think I was 8 months to get approved.
Yeah.
And since then they did the e-file, which shortened it.
Yep.
And now I just got word from my buddy. He had his approved in 3 days. So this is after the new year, 2026. So he didn't pay the fee.
Yep.
It took him 3 days. His buddy only took 1 day. So
There
was speculation that it might, you know, with the influx of people instead of, because it was really short, the 1 to 3 days was before 2026. And people were thinking, well, now that everyone's getting a suppressor, it's going to go to back to 6 months or do something crazy.
Right.
But it's not. Yeah. So it's, you don't pay the fee and it's 1 to 3 days to get approved.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be real. Lot of people are going to get on board. And once you buy one, it's kind of,
I know.
Absolutely.
It's a gateway drug.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before, but like I've used them because of the lab and work and testing, you know, for 15+ years. And I remember it was probably, I think it was back in like 2012 timeframe, give or take.
Yeah.
I started hunting with some suppressors for some work projects and, you know, I'd used them in the range and in the lab and I understood the appeal and the, you know, the outcome. But once I finally hunted with one, I was hunting hogs in Texas with a 300 blackout, a 9-inch 300 blackout. suppressed with a little, you know, red dot sight. And we're midday, and we're hunting deer. We'd set the stands in the morning, and then midday we go back to the ranch, and then we go out and we'd walk these like hardwood river bottoms, mm-hmm. and we just jump pigs along the river bottom in these hardwoods that were bedded down. And it was a blast. You know, yeah. you've got this little short handy gun, light recoil, quiet, and you could just shoot multiple pigs, you know, that you jump at a time. And we'd shoot 2-3 pigs at a time, jumping them along right. the river. And
yeah.
at that time, I was like, I need one of these.
Yeah. yeah.
And so that kind of started it. And once you, like you said, once you start, I mean, I'm at like 7 cans now that I personally own.
Wow.
You know, and it's just like you need dedicated ones for certain calibers.
Yeah.
And lightweight and AR and full auto and direct thread and bolt gun. I mean, most of mine are more bolt gun, rimfire cans. I mean, all right. the above.
Yeah.
You could see why. Yeah. And if it only becomes more approachable, you know, affordable. And it's the hassle too. Like, you know, there's the whole, like, I don't want to go fill out the, you still have to obviously do the forms and all that, but
right.
yeah,
hopefully this helps. And we'll see where maybe we go even further, you know, yeah. with litigation changes and regulations and make it even more approachable. But
mm-hmm. so yeah. I think if you can't tell as a team, I think we believe in, you know, the suppressor craze, right? And like, it's going to continue to grow. So we recognize that, we believe in it. And so we set out to do this suppressor series, right? Which yep. has a phenomenal package. I think it looks super cool, right? Big suppressor on the box.
That was the only thing that we did on the previous podcast that we did. Mitchell gave us one accolade, I guess you could say. Like
pat on the back.
Yeah, pat on the back there. And he said that our packaging was finally yeah. good.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Okay. I guess not it, finally good. Finally.
But it's a good looking box, good though.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
So talk through a little bit about, like, okay, we recognize the need
yep.
Or the craze and the interest in suppressors. So why suppressed optimized ammo? Like, yeah. what does that do?
I'll start with my thoughts, and then Mitchell can jump in with whatever he has. You Probably know, I think nothing. From an out from like the very outside, you could argue like, well, isn't any ammunition suppressor compatible?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
What makes this special? Yeah. Right. And so, right off the bat, just to clarify, the suppressor series with the 26 launch, as is, the SKUs that are available, they are all subsonic loads.
Okay.
You know, maybe that'll change in the future. Maybe it won't. I'm not going to get into that. But so far, the suppressor optimized ammunition that we're loading in suppressor series are subsonic. So we are starting there. So I do want to get that out front. These are not supersonic optimized suppressor loads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe down the road we'll look into stuff like that. Because in essence, anything that is ammunition, right, any supersonic sub, it can be fired with a suppressor.
Well, and with that, right, like before you go too far down that road, can you tell the audience, like, what's the difference between supersonic and subsonic? That way that they can fully understand what you're getting at there.
Good point. Yeah. No, good point. So it's the speed of sound, right? It's right. if a projectile is traveling faster than the speed of sound and breaking the sound barrier.
Yeah.
And so if you put a suppressor on a firearm and you're shooting your standard rifle, for example,
yeah.
30-06, 270, doesn't matter, 7 PRC, you know, you're anywhere from probably 2,500 to a fast cartridge is 3,500 feet per second. Obviously, there's some slower, some faster, but most your rifle cartridges are in that 28 to 3,000 range, okay? Way above the speed of sound,
yep.
right? So it gets into it. Mitchell, I'll let him get the engineering side, but I'm, for very just layman terms, I'm going to call the speed of sound in most conditions somewhere around 1,150 feet per second. You know, it okay. changes with conditions and air density and temperature and all these other things. And
I think 1116 to 1120, depending on your standard.
There you go. So 1100, 1116.
Yeah.
So generally, ammunition that is slower than that, intentionally, from the muzzle, is considered subsonic.
Gotcha.
So the ammo never breaks the sound barrier.
Yeah.
Meaning it's quieter. You do not get that supersonic crack. So if I go shoot my deer hunting ammo out of my 30-06 in my bolt action rifle with a suppressor on it, a couple things happen. It makes it quieter,
mm-hmm.
but it's still breaking the sound barrier. It makes it more pleasant. It can
pleasant from a recoil
perspective. From a recoil and a whole event. I like yeah, to call the it event. The event is yeah, the term okay. I like to use.
Okay.
You know, when you're firing, there's felt recoil on the shoulder. There's the gun moving. There's the blast. There's kind of that gas and percussion coming back at your face. You know, if you have a muzzle brake that can help with the felt recoil, you're getting more of that blast, that mm-hmm. gas. And so even if it's, and so that's why I like to really look at it from the whole event perspective, because
mm-hmm.
I do have a lot of opinion and thought. My theory is felt recoil is one thing, and I think it definitely affects us as shooters, but the entire event is a whole other thing that also affects us. And if you can reduce that event and make it more pleasant,
right.
quieter, I mean, you look at, I've been shooting my whole life, and it's way more enjoyable for me. If I'm gonna go throw a brand new shooter, this 8-year-old kid or an adult who's never fired in their life, You know, I want to make it as pleasant as possible. I want to make it a good experience for them to get into the sport. And that's where suppressors can really help out, right? They make the whole event pleasant.
Right.
They make it more civilized,
yeah.
You know? But that's really what I'm talking about with supersonic and subsonic. So a suppressor firing supersonic ammunition, it makes it quieter, but it's still breaking the sound barrier. So with suppressor series, to start with, we focused on subsonic loads. All of these are below the speed of sound. So with the rifle stuff, you know, we're talking 1050 box velocity.
Yeah.
You know, the pistol, the 9mm is right at about 1,000 feet per second from the muzzle. So that bullet, you know, velocity is lost over time and over distance, right? The minute it exits the muzzle, forces are pulling against it. Gravity, you know, wind, energy is being robbed off that projectile. It's slowing down. But one thing that is interesting, subsonic bullets, don't go through that transonic range. They don't go from supersonic to transonic into subsonic, where they can get some funky things happening with drag and energy and trajectories and yaw. And it's pretty violent generally if you go through that transition. That's why from really long range shooting and extended long range shooting, the goal is generally to keep it above. That's kind of your maximum, and forget expansion and terminal performance. I'm just talking effectively hitting targets consistently.
Yeah.
That's one of the things you really look at is, am I staying supersonic? And at what range? You know, if I want to go engage still at a mile or further, I mean, we've got a plate at our range that's 1,900 yards. You know, you've got to look at it and say, in order for me to effectively hit that target at 1,900 yards, I mean, there's a lot of variables no matter what, 1,900 yards. But if I can keep that bullet supersonic, I'm that much better, right?
Yeah, got it.
Back to what I was getting at, though, when you start out subsonic and you stay subsonic and it just slows down, but you're using high BC bullets like this 205 grain and these 220 grain that we're loading in the 300 blackout, and then the 205 and the 308. You know, these are 30 caliber, 205, 220 grade bullets. I mean, we're talking BCs in the high fours and fives, even 0.629 with the 220 grain, because it's a Match King, right?
Yeah.
There's not all those violent forces because it's already slow, if that makes sense, in a simple term.
Yeah, you're not still transitioning. Yeah.
Right, you're not transitioning, and there's not, it's not traveling as fast, so it's not having as much robbed off of it. In simple terms.
Okay.
So it does drop like crazy because it didn't start out fast and it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it does slow down, but it doesn't slow down as drastic in the short distance.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, if you started out with a 204 Ruger at 4,000 feet per second with a light little low BC varmint bullet, by 200 yards, that thing is dumped velocity.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just guessing off the top of my head, but you could be even down in the 2,000 foot per second range. I mean, it dumps velocity. If you start out at 1050, some of these at 200 yards, you're still going 950.
Wow.
Okay.
Like you're just not losing that much velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But really the goal is it doesn't break the sound barrier. It doesn't have that supersonic crack. And so it's quiet.
Right.
You don't have to have ear pro. There is really no report. There's no crack. There's no loud boom. There's no bang. You know, I've told this story before, but I remember on a project, this was 15, 20 years ago, working on some subsonic 308 we did. For some military stuff, I'm shooting in the concrete tunnel. I mean, I don't know if you guys have all shot in the concrete tunnel.
Yeah.
It's not pleasant.
Yeah.
It's loud. It's reporting off the concrete walls.
Right.
It's blast. It's pretty miserable.
Yeah.
But I could shoot in that tunnel without ear protection. And it was interesting because you would literally hear the firing pin drop. I mean, you hear the trigger, the firing pin drop. You can kind of hear some noise as the bullet travels down the range, but there's no crack. There's no blast. There's nothing. And so it just makes it very pleasant. And depending on your application, whether it be hunting or you're shooting in an urban area, you know, you're at a range, you want to make it pleasant for your neighbors, you're on a farm, you know, all those things where the noise can become a nuisance.
Right.
That's where potentially a subsonic, you know, obviously there's military and law enforcement applications as well for subsonic ammunition. But from a commercial market, you know, it's generally just makes it pleasant. Now it comes with limitations.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't fast ammo. This isn't long range ammo. This isn't, I'm going to kill an elk at 600 yard ammo.
Right.
You know, it has to be factored into the application. But with suppressor series, we really focused on for the launch subsonic loads that are accurate, that still perform, that cycle well in gas guns. You know, when we look at the blackouts and the 9mm,
yeah.
We selected the right propellants, you know, and I can get deeper into this later. Yeah. But there's a lot that went into it that made it truly optimized to have subsonic with good performance.
Yeah.
You know, good consistent velocities, cycling the gas guns properly. And even with the 205 grain, the bullet actually expands for terminal performance.
Yeah.
So we got to go into what the actual SKUs are.
Exactly.
Hold on one second. Yeah. I got one kind of follow-up question. and just kind of speaking at high level terms, right? Not specific data, but if you took a 308 and you shot with just a suppressor, or sorry, you shoot it unsuppressed, right? When you add the suppressor onto that 308, what kind of like volume or crack reduction do you get? Is it 30% by adding a suppressor? You know what I'm asking? Well, like,
are you saying for a normal load versus like and a suppressor series?
Yeah, so okay. A normal load, yeah.
I don't have the data off the top of my head, but I know a lot of the suppressor companies provide what reduction can be expected.
It's in terms of decimals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a measurement.
Yeah.
I mean, what? I don't know what 30 decimals feels like.
Yeah.
Would it's you kind say of a weird 20%? Scale.
Yeah. Right or wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Years ago when I was shooting a lot of precision matches.
Yeah.
Most of that was done without a suppressor.
Okay.
I was shooting a 6.5 by 47 Lapua for a lot of years. I've done, 6.5 284 when I was doing some longer range stuff. The last few matches I did, though, I actually was competing suppressed. 6.5 Creedmoor 140 in a chassis rifle. I was running a AAC tire aid can. And I would shoot at the range for practice and during the match with no air protection.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But it reduced it to a point where I could shoot without air protection.
Yeah.
And what cartridge did you say?
6.5 Creedmoor. That was 140 grain match burner in the precision match ammo. So I'm talking, your 2,700 feet per second muzzle velocity.
Wasn't a Magnum.
6.5 Creedmoor 140, but it's not, you're not going to go shoot it without ear pro.
Yeah.
Without a suppressor. So it's enough. I don't have the technical data to say it reduced it by X percent or, they will show you, you can go to this, because every suppressor is slightly different.
Yeah.
Depending on its design and baffles and material and all these things of how much sound it can reduce with full house loads.
Yeah.
But I, from just a very simple, rough feedback to answer your question is 6.5 Creedmoor 140, my own experience, I was shooting and competing with a suppressor without ear pro.
Yeah, so you go from ear pro to none.
Yep.
And then now not just do you have the can, but now you add the subsonic load and you don't even hear anything, you don't feel anything.
So I'll
give
you a story with that.
Okay.
And maybe I shouldn't say this. I live in a pretty rural area.
Okay.
Small town up in the mountains. I live on an acre. Houses are spread out. I don't have a lot of people around me. I'm kind of up against the base of the mountain. So it's changed because of development and some few new homes. But there was a time where I could pretty much shoot from my backyard. And I wouldn't shoot rifle.
Yeah.
But, I'd shoot, air rifle, even some rimfire.
Okay.
This is what that means, though. I went out on my deck and I was taking out some, we'll call them pests, in the backyard. And this is rimfire, but subsonic, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I shot a 22 rimfire, and it's loud enough that I would never do that in my backyard.
Okay.
Unsuppressed.
Okay.
And without subsonic ammo.
Okay.
I threw a rimfire suppressor on it and got subsonic ammo. I walked out on my deck that's attached to our dining room next to our kitchen. My wife was in there doing something. I took care of the pests with 5 or 6 shots. Walked back in. My wife had no clue what I was doing. And I asked her, hey, did you hear any of that? She's like, what? I said, did you know what I was doing out there? She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, perfect. So that's what subsonic with a suppressor means.
Okay. No, that's excellent. Quick. That's a way to put it in layman's terms.
So while you guys were going back and forth, I was doing a little bit of research here. What I found is it says that the average suppressor, right? And this is just kind of across the board, right? Will drop it about 25 to 30 decibels.
Okay.
And by doing that, right, it's saying that the average gunshot is around 170 to 177 decibels. So it'll bring it down to about, give or take, 120 to 125.
Okay.
And that means it gives about a 35% reduction. And
I think from a general safety term across industries with noise, and I'm way off here. I could be way off here. I'm sure you can Google it in 2 seconds. I want to say that you're supposed to be probably under 100 decibels to not have ear damage from any sort of event or activity.
Yeah. So when you put a suppressor on, you're dropping it, say, on average, 30%, roughly.
30-35%.
Okay. And then when you add subsonic ammo to it, you're probably dropping it at least another 30%, if not more.
I mean, it's more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Subsonic ammo with the can, literally, there is no supersonic crack.
Yeah.
It is quiet. I mean, I back to that story, I have since shot, I'm going to call them high-end air rifles in my backyard, right next side by side with a rimfire suppressed and subsonic ammo. Not even comparison. The air rifle is way louder than the 22 with a can on it with subsonic. With subsonic. Ammo.
Hmm. Wow. So getting back to Mitchell's point now, going through the SKUs, yep. Let's go through the SKUs, but then I also want to ask for every single one, what would you use this for?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's the purpose?
No, that's a good question.
Yeah. All right. So we have five different products, really four. One has a different round count. But first one, 300 blackout with a 200 5 range. So these are all Sierra projectiles, by the way. So 300 blackout with a 200 5 grain Game King.
Okay.
So that's a expanding bullet. The next one is a 300 blackout, 220 grain Sierra Match King. That one's not going to have any expansion characteristics. It might tumble if you hit something, but it's not meant to expand. So you ask, well, what's it for? 220 is more plinking, messing around, having fun, shooting steel. Super pleasant, but shooting that 205, you get that terminal performance. So if you want to, hunt a smaller game with it, I wouldn't obviously go shoot an elk at 600 yards, but it does have some terminal performance to it, which is really cool. It's not easy to do when you're shooting. Our muzzle velocity is 1050, so there's just not a ton of energy. That's why they're really heavy. But it adds a little bit of terminal performance to it.
Okay. So would that be like a pest? No,
with the 205 grain,
with it for sure.
You can. Pigs and deer, like I'd say thin skin game.
Okay.
The range needs to be kept in reason though.
Yeah.
I would say realistically, this is probably 100 yard and in performance.
Okay.
I already mentioned it doesn't lose a lot of velocity, but it is extremely difficult to get bullets to reliably expand at those subsonic velocities, especially these rifle bullets that don't have giant big open cavities.
Yeah.
Right. Because they also have to feed well and they have to be streamlined because we also want BC. And the heavy weight helps us cycle gas guns well. That's also why you see heavy, 205 grain and 300 blackout. It helps us achieve the pressure and velocity and the port pressure and everything we need to do to run gas guns effectively and reliably. That's another reason it's heavy. It's why it's not 110 grain 300 blackout load like our supersonic.
Okay.
But the 205 grain definitely could be used for hunting or for, LE purposes as well. Because you do get that bull expansion. The Sierra team designed that 205 grain specific for a 300 blackout subsonic to actually get function. Right at muzzle, they are full expansion. Nice. If you shot a gel block at, the standard, in our range, our chronographs are in front of the gel. And so the gel generally ends up somewhere around about 25 feet. You're getting full-blown expansion.
Wow.
I'm talking double diameter expansion. It drops off pretty quick, though. Not necessarily the velocity, but the difference of 50 feet per second can make a big difference in bullet expansion.
Okay.
So at 100 yards, roughly 1050 at the muzzle, standard conditions, because obviously there's variables in atmospheric conditions, air density, all these things, temperature. But at 100 yards in standard conditions, you're going to be going about 1,000 feet per second.
Okay.
That bullet will still get expansion at 1,000 feet per second. So that's why I say that 100 yard. Now, shot placement obviously matters no matter what.
Of course,
right. You don't have a ton of energy. You don't have a ton of velocity. You're dropping like crazy. That's another thing. And at the end of the day, it's hard to get a good accuracy. Yeah.
They're clearly not shooting subsonic downstairs right now.
Yeah.
Clearly not.
But sorry, you're good. Distracting.
But if you're a guy that lives on a farm somewhere and you want to shoot a whitetail off your back porch and, you've got a 50-yard shot, this is entirely capable.
Okay.
Don't push it, though. I would add that caution. Like Mitchell said, this isn't, hey, I'm going to go shoot, a mule deer at 300 yards with this.
Yeah.
It needs to be kept within the reason, but it will expand.
Okay.
So for hunting and LE defense scenarios is what this 205 grain is for.
Okay.
But I would kind of put it out there 100 yard and in. 150, you're about that 950, 960 retained velocity.
Yeah.
You still will get some expansion, but you're pretty minimal. You're probably more in that 1.1 to 1.3 times diameter.
Okay. Okay. And then the 220, right? That's like you said, more of a plinking target practice.
Mm-hmm. And it can. It won't expand,
yeah.
Like Mitchell
alluded to. Match King, yeah.
It will yaw, and depending what you hit, you're relying on that bullet to yaw, maybe break a nose cone or split some lead or have any sort of upset, or it's not mushrooming, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not very reliable
yeah.
way of getting expansion. It's not yeah. going to be consistent.
Yeah.
But there have been uses of even 220s like an LE and stuff.
Okay.
But that's where this 205 is going to be such an advancement, is giving that reliable expansion on target.
Okay.
Yeah, so the next one would be a 308 win, which again goes back to that 205 Game King, right? So, I mean, obviously we kind of talked about what you would use in a 300 blackout, and I think that this kind of is the same.
It's the same.
Right? Like mm-hmm. basically the same. But now you have a bolt gun versus a gas gun.
And that is worth bringing up, because we talked about this a little bit in the previous podcast, but to deep dive, 308 win in a gas gun is AR-10 based,
right?
And it is that much more difficult to get reliable functioning of the weapon.
Yep.
Right. And so you're getting into port pressure and gas systems and, you know, gas blocks and adjustments and gas links and buffer springs and buffer spring weights. It takes a lot to be able to tune an AR-10 in 308 to reliably, successfully run subsonic ammunition.
Yeah.
I mean, I bring it up that generally that's why cartridges like 300 Blackout exist.
Yeah.
And some of these others that are coming out, you know, that these traditional cartridges don't always work well, just with conventional twist rates, case capacity, bullet weights, and what it takes to cycle these AR-10s. And so it's this load is not designed to cycle semi-automatic or full auto guns. So we right. do want to be up yeah. front with that.
Yeah.
And it's the disclaimers are out there. The warnings yeah. are out there. Even on the box,
yep. Yep.
it'll tell you that.
Right.
But yeah, as far as the application, though, same thing. Precision, this 308 load shoots flat out.
Yeah.
Like if you had a 308, you know, SBR, you know, or even like a little 16 inch and you had a can on it and you wanted to shoot it with the added benefits of a subsonic load. So maybe your urban areas or your farm or something like mm-hmm. that, your close range, you're going to be 100 yards and in. But you really want great precision, but you want that subsonic and you still want some bold expansion for potentially the same things we talked about with the blackout.
Yeah.
That's what this 308 is going to give you. But we do want to be clear that this is not designed to function in a gas gun. If you're going to fire in your gas gun, you can still fire it. It's not going to cycle though. You're going to have to manually
yeah.
extract the case yep. and cycle the next round.
Okay. Yeah. If you think about it, on the AR-10, it's a significantly larger bolt than yep. the AR-15. And then you have that short action length too. So you got to move that bolt all the way back for that 308 wind case to yep. eject. And it just doesn't work. That's really why the 300 blackout took off.
Yeah.
It's because you can cycle. Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of it. It's not the yeah, reason
part
why.
Of it,
but yeah, it's kind of the math behind it kind of makes sense. Right.
But in the AR-15 platform, I think it is a good point, though. The blackout is that much more successful with subsonic than 5.56 ever has been.
Yes.
5.56 is a huge struggle to get reliable subsonic ammunition
yeah.
to cycle a gas gun.
Yeah.
And that is why the 300 blackout really did take off.
Okay.
Many years ago, is because you get that mass and that weight, and we can push 220 grain bullets
yeah.
and get that, you know, able to cycle those. The AR-15 is lighter and shorter, and you know, it's easier on buffer springs. You can run the same gun generally with subsonic ammo and supersonic ammo successfully if everything's tuned right. The 308, you would have to go pretty extreme with bullet weight. Like you're talking stuff in the 280 to 300 grain. Now mm-hmm. we're looking at custom twist rates that
yeah.
aren't
yeah.
standard in 308.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm even modifying my gun with different buffer springs and all these adjustments. You're going to try to tune it to run subsonic, and now it's not even going to run supersonic well. And so it's yeah. it just didn't make sense. We wanted to offer 308 win, but this is more of bolt gun, break action, single shots, or your AR just realize you're going to manually be cycling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably helped to have like a side charging handle.
Yeah. If you wanted to do that route.
Yeah.
For sure.
The other cool thing is the ballistics for the 308 win with the 205 are identical to the 300 blackout 205. So, which is very uncommon in ammo. You look at different cartridges, even with the same bullet weight, there's obviously different muzzle velocities, but
right.
subsonic, we target 1050 for both loads.
Mm.
So it's just kind of funny. You think that they'd be different, but they're
yeah.
identical.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same 30 cal 205 going the exact same velocity.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting.
That's cool. Okay. And finally we got 9mm. Why did we want to do a 9mm?
Because it's super popular and awesome to shoot.
Yeah.
And it's economical too.
Right.
So I'm looking at MSRP. So we have two offerings,
yep.
20 round count and a 50 round count. So the 20 round count MSRP is $21. And then you save quite a bit of money with the 50 round count. It's 43. So super fun to shoot 9mm suppressed. Again, subsonic, it's heavy, but you don't, it's just, I don't know, in a pistol platform, it's flat out fun to shoot.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, and we went with the 147 grain because that weight helps us get subsonic velocity
right.
more reliably, more consistent velocities, extreme mm-hmm. spread, and it actually helps cycle the guns as well. What makes it unique from just any, because there's a lot of 147 grain 9mm on the market, right?
Right.
It's a pretty standard load
yep.
Across the board, even if you're not shooting suppressed. But what makes this unique and optimized and why it can be called suppressor series is we've specifically designed the load and selected components to, one, reliably cycle
yep.
as many platforms as possible and have better experience with less fouling, less gas blowback. If you've ever shot handguns suppressed, it can be pretty miserable. It's dirty experience, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of gas is coming out of that system. There's, depending on the propellant, sometimes there's even particles coming back at you as a shooter.
Yeah.
And it just makes it where it's really not that pleasant. And so we did a lot of work to really select the right components to make sure that we have good, reliable, you know, consistent velocities.
Yeah.
Reliable performance and you know running guns
yep.
as well as a good experience and not having you know very minimal blowback, gas in your face, you know that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So just to put a bow on the 9mm stuff, like plinking, obviously right, range time, trigger, mm-hmm. trigger time, right, defense.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'd say specialized scenarios for okay. for a consumer. You know, I don't really see the need.
Yeah.
I think if I was looking at home defense scenario. You know, maybe a guy could argue that he wants to be sub, but most guys, you're not going to have a can on the end of your 9mm for home defense.
Right.
This one, I straight up, like for me as a shooter, I see it a little more. I hate to say this. Maybe I shouldn't word this way, but it is a little bit more of a novelty load. It's guys that want to just run a can on the gun because they can.
Well, and I would also look at it as like those major metropolitan areas, right? Like if you go to a gun range, you have to have a suppressor on there or shoot something like that, right? Because of tight conditions, everything like that, and being quiet. Yeah. So, you know, for us out here in the West where you can, you know, you kind of got wide open spaces and everything like that, maybe it's not perfect for us because we're not going to really do that much. But I think for those major metropolitan areas, I think that's where it's going to really shine at. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good point too. A quick follow-on question. These are optimized for suppressors, mm-hmm. but you can certainly shoot them without suppressors.
For sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you could shoot that 9 without a can on it.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it's going to be quieter.
And it's still going to be quieter than what you would with a supersonic load.
It is. And most, just being up front, most 147 grain 9mm loads are going to come subsonic just because of the weight in the cartridge.
Yeah.
Generally, you can't get that much velocity. So they're kind of subsonic on their own.
Yeah.
But you're right. This ammo absolutely can run in non-suppressed handguns.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and probably will be. You know, most guys, because you go throw a 4 to 6 inch can on the end of your handgun, that changes things a little bit more than a rifle.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so you don't really see a ton of people outside of the fun factor.
Yeah.
You know, really running a ton of suppressed handguns.
Yeah. Right. You wanted to say something.
Yeah. Yeah. You made a good point there. A lot of people offer that 147 and it is subsonics and it kind of asks the question, well, why is ours special? And why is this whole suppressor series optimized for suppressors? We've gone into a little bit, but I wanted to hit on that more. And you look at our muzzle velocity, we're at 1050. So I told you guys, speed of sound is
1116,
1120. So why wouldn't we load to 1100? Because then the Game King would expand even more.
Yep.
You get more distance out of it. So why don't we do that? And it comes down to velocity variation. So your average velocity is 1050, but you're always going to have variation. You're going to have stuff go 20 feet high, 20 feet low. And that's where this is optimized. We're selecting propellants that are very consistent.
Yep.
If you shoot poor ammo or just off the shelf 9mm 147, you'll get zingers.
Yeah.
Where you have so much variation, they actually go supersonic. So, like Greg, I was shooting in our backyard with a 22 subsonic, and we had one go supersonic, and it was not good.
And it's actually pretty common. It is a struggle, like just flat out. It's not easy to load subsonic consistently. It's just not.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just, to be upfront with people, if they haven't had experience with that, don't put this in the same realm. And I'm not even talking about suppressor series. I'm talking about everything subsonic, whether you're hand loading, whether you're looking at a standard 147, rimfire ammo, whatever. getting that velocity spread, those extreme spreads down to what would be considered like precision match level numbers, mm-hmm. like isn't really achievable. Like you have to keep it in a pretty realistic perspective.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and so with that, we do target 1050, like Mitchell's bringing up, to account for some of that variation. And we've also gone above and beyond to do everything we can to select the right components to load as consistently possible as well.
Yeah.
So you have minimal variation, but it's a balance because you want all that velocity you can to run guns better. You go too high and conditions change and you could get zingers, they call them, where that's, and like rimfire, if you've ever shot a bunch of subsonic rimfire ammo, it's pretty common. And I'm talking across the board from many manufacturers.
Yeah.
It's tough to get them consistently stay subsonic.
Yeah. Okay. And so you talked a little bit about, at least on the 9mm, the price variation, right? 21 mm-hmm. versus 43. The rest of them are all 20 packs. So like, as you look at the range of pricing, what's the MSRP range for this offering?
So we got $28 for the 300 blackout, and that's in both offerings. And then we got $48, $49 for the 308.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and so that's pretty dang good for ammo, especially if you're plinking. You don't want to, it's not hunting ammo. You're not going to buy a box and, you know, it's going to last 2 years because you only shoot a couple times. This is go shoot a bunch.
Yeah.
Go buy a lot.
Go buy a lot. Yeah. And so when can consumers expect this to be either available on the website or in stores?
What's kind of the warehouse? When's the podcast going live?
The podcast will go live on February 6th.
So it ought to be out by then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking end of January, very early February is kind of where we're tracking right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, by the time this podcast hit, it ought to be
it's
available.
Be right around there.
Or you can go to our website. So. It'll be on there for sure. All the info, you can look at the specs, everything, but you should be able to order as well.
Right.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, call Dale and yell at him.
Well, actually call Mitchell because you're the product guy.
Well,
I do have two quick things. I know we got to wrap up, but I want to jump back to, and they're kind of connected. The price, it is super competitive. It's a good value, but this isn't cheap plinking ammo. I mean, these are Sierra Game King, Match Kings, JHPs.
Yeah.
These are quality premium components and projectiles. These aren't just, they're not FMJs. This isn't just ball ammo.
Yeah.
And so with that, my other point is circling back to the 147 when you're asking about use case, this is a JHP.
Yeah,
this bolt will expand as well, and we didn't really talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can very well shoot this in any standard 9mm handgun without a can, and it's like any other 147 grain JHP that's quality ammo that's going to perform well for defense, for carry, for home defense, all those things. It's just with a can on it, that's where I was trying to get to.
Okay.
I'm not going to necessarily have a can on my 9mm for a defense scenario. Like I said, maybe there's specialized LE, military LE applications for that.
Yeah.
But for me as a consumer in my home or as a carry gun, I'm not necessarily looking at it from a suppressor standpoint, but from just 9mm carry ammo in my standard gun, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a very reliable expanding
JHP.
It's
the can, that's the nuance. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The ammo itself with the 147 JHP is an expanding bullet that works really well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Are your questions answered?
I think so. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with this. I feel much better about why we're doing this.
Are you going to buy more cans, Andy? Because you have one, right?
I have one. Yeah, I have one. Yes, I need to buy more. Now I don't have to pay the $200 for the tax stamp.
That's true. I did find one the other day that I now want. I know we're going long, but I've been like anti-dedicated cans as far as centerfire.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to start going down that road because I've seen some lightweight 22 cans for like 22 Creed, 22 Arc, 5.56 that are stupid light. I might have to get one.
So I really want a 22 rimfire can badly, right? For exactly your reason of like being able to, I mean, I live on an acre and a half, whatever. Right. I can shoot in my backyard, all that. Kids. Not shoot kids.
Shoot kids?
Not shoot kids. Dale. Teach the kids how to shoot in the backyard with a 22 can. There we go. Sorry. But talking about dedicated cans, I am very much going down that road too. And there's a new suppressor company out there, right, that probably going to do some stuff with us pretty soon, but they have a 7mm can. And since 60% of my guns are around that 284 diameter, it makes a lot of sense to go that way.
I know we're trying to wrap it up. I'll be quick. I promise. But back to kind of where you asked, what's that reduction? Those, you can get advancements there,
right?
You can get improvements. I should say,
yeah.
I run 30 cal. I don't care if it's my 6mm, my 280, my 308, my 301. I'm running my 30 cal can on all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I also have a Silencer Co. hybrid 45 or 46, they call it. You know, it's a 45 caliber. You can run like a 45-70. I've run it on a 338 Lapua, and I run it with a 30 cal end cap, and I run it on a Win Mag. But I'm looking at, is it worth getting a 6mm dedicated can or a 224 dedicated? Like if I build a 22 Creed or a 22 Arc, there are some reasons to justify a dedicated 22 can to get a little bit better performance that's optimized for that cartridge.
Yeah, okay. I will say that Brady had one of these on that Mountain Goat Hunt, right? And it's a 6.5 dedicated, and he was running that 6.5 PRC, and that thing was stupid quiet.
Yeah.
Like crazy, crazy quiet. So
I've kind of erred on more versatility.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to give up some of the reduction, and I can run this 30 cal on any direct thread bolt gun.
Yeah.
But I can see the... It's just and you definitely need a rimfire can.
Yeah, I know I do. I need one bad.
So. Definitely makes it achievable with the not paying $200
for sure. Yeah. So, and rimfire cans.
Well,
are
I mean,
more...
if you order five cans, you just got an extra can by not having $200.
Exactly.
To that point though, like rimfire cans are pretty reasonable. I mean, there's a lot of them in the market that are that $200 to $400 range.
Yeah.
You know, and so. Yeah. Now you're not, because that was a hard part. You're like, the can's $200. Well, the stamp's $200.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
So, anyways,
is rimfire next? Are we? You gonna load that?
No, God,
no!
Stop. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening to another Barnes Bullets podcast. I'm gonna cut Mitchell off right now.
Come on.
Appreciate everybody listening. Hope that you are excited about the suppressor series as we are. And go check it out this year. And we'll see you later.